Good morning.
Please
join with me in prayer. As you learn the words of this prayer through the week, please join in. Spirit of the living God, come now and grow our faith, deepen our hope, strengthen our love, and come and water within each of us the desire to be your faithful friends forever. Amen. Well, young Billy made himself a catapult from a forked stick and a piece of rubber in a tube. He couldn't wait to test it out. So he set up a line of tin cans on the fence and armed himself with a small pile of stones and let fly. Well, you can't expect to hit them all, he told himself after his first shot went wide. That excuse started to wear a bit thin after the second stone also missed its target, and the 10th, and the 25th. And after half an hour of pulling and aiming, he still had not hit a single tin can. So he was walking away in disgust to deposit his catty in the nearest bin, when out of the corner of his eye, he saw Grandma's duck waddling past. Convinced that there was no possibility that he could hit a moving target, if stationary tins had eluded him, he swung into action with his last stone. Twang! Thud! You guessed it. There lay Grandma's duck as dead as Goliath. In a panic, Billy dug a shallow grave and hastily dealt with the evidence. Then he ran back into the house, guilt clearly evident through his feigned nonchalance. Nevertheless, it seemed that he had got away with his dastardly deed. He even managed to keep a straight face at supper time when Grandma asked if anyone had seen her duck lately. After supper, it was his sister's turn to do the washing up. But this time, she slyly suggested that Billy might want to do it for her. Why should I ever want to do your chores? He said, because I saw what happened to Grandma's duck. So for the next 2 weeks, Billy was a virtual slave. Anything his tyrant sister wanted, he had to do. He did her chores, ran her errands, cleaned her shoes, and even cleaned her smelly hamster cage. Finally, he could take it no longer. He knew there was only one way out, to confess to Grandma. Any punishment she would mete out would be better than the torment he was living under. I killed your duck, Grandma, he blurted out in a rush. I know, Billy. I've known ever since you blushed scarlet that supper time when I asked about my duck. And I've also seen how your sister has been tormenting you for 2 weeks. I think you've been punished enough. I wondered how long it would take you to come and own up so that you could stop your punishment. We're not punished for our sin, we're punished by our sin. Someone once said, sin doesn't make us bad, it makes us sad. Covering up our sin makes us bad. Grandma God, Grandma God. Amen? Sadly, sister church. Sister church. Grandma God, sister church. What a difference. Sister church, who over the centuries have profited from our sin. I think it was William Sloane Coffin, one of your great prophets, who said the oldest and worst form of corruption is religion becomes subservient to profit making. Not business become a god, but God become a business. And that was the difference, as I understand it, between Jesus and the religious class or institution of his day. Not that he believed in forgiveness and they didn't. They also believed in forgiveness, but not free forgiveness. There were criteria. There were conditions. There was sacrifice needed. In other words, payment. A transaction. People, in fact, even got into debt to be free of their debts. I mean, have you ever been given a gift and then asked to pay for it? No. Gifts, by definition, are freely given for free. Freely given for free. Gifts cost the giver, not the receiver. Jesus freely forgives for free. Forgiveness may be accepted, it may be rejected, but it cannot be paid for. And this was bad news for the economy. I mean, this affects the economy. I think I read somewhere, I think it was Richard Rohr who said something like this, about 90% of the economy in Jerusalem revolved around the temple sacrifice system. So to come into town and offer free forgiveness for free would be to attack the heart of the economy. Needless to say, the religious class who made their money out of this religious economy were more than a little peeved. So they accused Jesus of blasphemy. In other words, saying something false about God. So they had too much to lose. One, their long-standing understanding of God. Two, they'd live to keep the rules for reward. What would be the point now if it's for free? And always, always follow the money. So they killed Jesus. They killed Jesus because Jesus freely forgave for free. And while he's dying, he freely forgives those who are killing him for free. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. To forgive, the word give is in the word forgive, to give for. When we are forgiven, Jesus gives for us. What does he give for us? He gives us the knowledge that which we do to him is not as important as we are to him. Did you get that? That which we do to him is not as important as we are to him. He values us more than anything we could do. Now notice the seven words that were not spoken from the cross. The seven words that were not spoken from the cross. Oh, Father, if there's anyone out there who is sorry for what they have done, forgive them. Oh, Father, if there's anyone who repents for what they have done, forgive them. Oh, Father, if there's anyone who goes to confession about what they've done, please forgive them. Oh, Father, if there's anyone who's a follower of me, forgive them. If anyone's a Lutheran, a Methodist, a Holden visitor, none of those words were spoken from the cross. Forgiveness is not negotiated. Not negotiated. It's not brokered. It's given unilaterally. Do you know that Jesus loves to forgive you? Loves to forgive you. And he longs for you to know that you're forgiven. More than anything else, he longs for that. John the Baptizer summed up Jesus, his whole life in one sentence. Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. The world. The world's sin has been taken away. It's been forgiven. Please accept that today, that you're forgiven for free. Please accept it. And the way we accept it is to allow God to love us, especially that part that we think God would struggle most to forgive. Let God love you. Therefore I tell you, her sins, which were many, have been forgiven. Hence, she has shown great love. It seems to me that the result of forgiveness is not just personal peace, not just a clean conscience, not just a good night's sleep, but a proportionate increase in loving. That the result of being forgiven is being able to love more. So from the gift, the free gift we're given, outflows from a gratitude, a generosity to love. We love because God first loved us. We forgive because God first forgave us. And so we are invited to do to others what God has done to us. To become a forgiving person. I don't know how it is in this country, but in my country, when you want to do some touch-up on your house or something, cover up some of the cracks with paint, scratches, etc., you go to the paint store, and you literally just need 100 mils of paint, but you can never buy just 100 mils of paint. You have to buy a full liter. And that's what comes to my mind when I think of God, who comes into our lives to touch up, to cover the cracks, but doesn't just do it with 100 mils, gives us a whole liter. In other words, there's a whole lot left over to not only cover the full multitude of our cracks, but the full multitude of every other crack that we ever meet in the world. And if we know what happens when we don't use that touch-up paint, It goes all hard and crusty. So as we have forgiven, as we have been forgiven, we are called to forgive. I asked my friend and mentor, Dan Erlander, why did he call his book Manner and Mercy? And he said to me that at the heart of the Lord's Prayer are the words, give us our daily bread and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those. And then he said that this was perhaps not just a prayer, but rabbis in those days would have summarized their entire teaching into a prayer. So what we have in the Lord's Prayer is not just a prayer, but a summary of Jesus' teaching. And at the heart of Jesus' summary is manner and mercy. Forgive us. So when you and I go on a journey to become a forgiving person, as we have been forgiven, we are on a journey into the heart of God's heart. It's a sacred journey. There's no more beautiful journey to go on. So let's have a look at now a journey of us becoming a forgiving people. I guess hurt and betrayal and being abused or demeaned or ignored or cheated are for sadly many of us, too many of us, everyday ingredients of our life. And the question is, what do we do with these things that happen to us? Happen to us by our friends, by our family, by our colleagues. And I want to suggest today especially that sometimes the person who persecutes us the most is ourselves. And we wish we could delete what some other has done to us or what we have done. We wish we could, but we discover there's no delete button on the human heart. And the more we try and forget, we remember. And then sometimes when we do think we've forgotten, we hear a song on the radio, hey? And we're taken back to that place and that time with that person, and it all comes flooding back. And we remember what we did. And things that we thought we were forgiven for just live again within us. Or things that others have done to us. I guess there are three options when we hurt, or when we've been hurt. The one is to hurt in return. I guess the word vengeance. To get even, to make the other person pay. And sometimes that is ourselves. Please hear that. Sometimes we can go through life punishing ourselves, hurting ourselves, trying to get even with ourselves to teach us a lesson. It was Clarence Darrow who said, I have never killed a man, but I have read many obituaries with great pleasure. And so that when we talk about getting even, it's not, you know, going out to whack someone, you know, with me. Sometimes it's just here. It's really just here. It lives. Just the sense of wanting something not good to happen or to, I don't know, connect with another. And here's the problem with this getting even stuff, and it happens on a personal and international level. In attempting to balance the scales, we inevitably tip them over to the other side because the victim and the perpetrator do not measure the hurt on the same scale. One is always left trailing. And so you have this tit-for-tat struggle that goes on and on and on. The other option is denial. We could pretend that it never happened, convince ourselves it wasn't so serious. It's difficult sometimes to acknowledge the depth of pain, especially of what someone has done to us or what we have done to them. It acknowledges the real depth of the relationship. So we can pretend, we can lie to ourselves, but here's the thing, we cannot lie to ourselves without knowing that we're lying to ourselves. Even at a subconscious level. When you lie to another, a division comes between you. When you lie to yourself, a division comes within you. And to lie to oneself is a gruesome act. It's a gruesome act. It's to bury our feelings alive. Bury them alive. That's gruesome. And they always burrow up again, attaching themselves to sometimes quite unrelated things. Quite cancerous. And so we bury them not dead, but alive. And that is extremely tormenting. Now, sometimes, if we move on to forgiveness, we can, especially religious folk, we can use the word forgiveness to cover up a multitude of truth. That we can use the word to say, I forgive you, but in actual fact, we are meaning something totally different. We could be meaning, I don't want to talk to you. But it's far more noble to say, I forgive you. You getting it? I forgive you. Leave me alone, or I'm indifferent, or I dismiss you. But I lump it all under that one word. So let's be clear. Forgiveness is not overlooking another's wrongdoing. It's not sweeping it under the carpet. It's not making excuses for it. It's not saying it wasn't so bad. It's not saying I'll just let it go. It's not saying let bygones be bygones, forgive and forget. They're catchy phrases, but they have nothing to do with forgiveness. Forgiveness is not some sentimental trick concealing reality, disguising the damage, surrendering the truth. And we must be careful not to confuse forgiveness with reconciliation. They're not the same thing. One can be a part of the other, but they're not the same thing. You can have forgiveness without reconciliation, but you probably can't have reconciliation without forgiveness. Forgiveness does not necessarily mean returning things to the way things were before whatever happened. Sometimes that's impossible, to return things to the way things were. Sometimes the person is no longer around. Sometimes they've remarried. Sometimes they're dead. Now, I always worry when I share about forgiveness because I come from a country where 70% of the women live in abusive relationships or have been abused in some form. And this is what I worry. I worry specifically about women who listen to a man speaking about forgiveness and reconciliation, knowing that they've lived in or have been or are in a relationship to some degree of emotional or physical abuse. And I fear what they hear. I fear that they are hearing me say you need to go back into that abusive relationship and continue. That is not what I'm saying. To return repetitively back into abusive relationship has nothing to do with forgiveness, and probably a whole lot more to do with a person's sense of self. sense of self-worth, sense of self-value. And when a person has a low sense of self, they may be inclined to accept inappropriate proportions of responsibility or blame for the abuse. Because they have a withered sense of self, they are unable to clearly demarcate what is their responsibility and what is the other's responsibility. So they take what is not theirs onto themselves. And you can't do anything about that because it's not yours. So you're in a no-win situation. And to journey on the road of forgiveness for that person will need a long journey of healing, knitting together their sense of self first. So forgiveness and reconciliation are not necessarily the same thing. I think sometimes we confuse the word forgiveness with toleration. When we say, I can never forgive that, that's unforgivable, what we're saying is it's intolerable. But because a thing is intolerable does not make it unforgivable. And when we forgive something that is intolerable, we are not making it tolerable. We must make the distinction between forgiveness and toleration. So what is forgiveness, in my understanding? One, it cannot be separated from the truth. Forgiveness is about being honest. It's about being truthful about the hurt, about what or who is responsible. It's about naming it. It's not letting it off the hook or watering it down. It's holding it to account, or the one account, but not in order to demean, in order to set free and to heal. Everything hinges on the motivation. So it's not denying, but nor is it being determined by what happened. Forgiveness is, in my understanding, saying these words: what you have done to me was hurtful. It was wrong. But I will not allow what you have done to me to determine my behavior towards you. And so then forgiveness has as much to do with the future as the past. Forgiveness carves out a new future, a future that is no longer determined by that hurt or abuse. I think it is reminding whoever has hurt us, that may be ourselves, that the person is more important to us than what they've done to us. And upholding that precious humanity. Let's look at one or two aspects of how we can make this journey. I first want to say that forgiveness is probably going to look very different depending on the nature of the relationship that we're in. If it's with family or a stranger or colleagues, it's going to look different. And so forgiveness is not just the same recipe over and over, just add water and stir. It's working it out every single time. And what we have to work out is what will secure integrity in this relationship once more. And what will secure integrity in this relationship or this situation may not be adequate in another relationship or situation. And so everything that I'm saying should be heard in an adaptable light. I guess the journey for me begins just realizing or admitting or consenting that I'm called to be a forgiving person. That's where it starts. Second, for me to simply give up the right to get even. And we can do that right now, right here, in this place. We may not know what anything else we need to do for forgiveness, but we can give up the right to get even. Can we do that on a national scale? And then to be absolutely honest with ourselves, to be truthful about our feelings of hostility, of helplessness, of fear, of hatred, and to acknowledge that. And then if we are unable to acknowledge those feelings with the one who has hurt us, for whatever reason, perhaps we do not feel able, perhaps we're not in a position of safety to do that, perhaps they're no longer around, perhaps it may not be helpful. Then we need to find a third party to be able to speak those truthful feelings to, because only when we've spoken those feelings and they've been heard and held in love, very often can we be set free from them. And I don't know about you, but I would imagine that the people that we've been hurt most by are most often, I know I'm hedging here a little, those closest to us. Because you see, they have the ability to hurt us the most. Because we've let them inside our heart. And so it's not hurt from without, it's hurt from within. And so sometimes we can be caught, especially young people here, and all of us were that once, where we love mom, we love dad, but we've also got a rage within us toward them. And it's difficult to acknowledge the rage towards them because we don't want to nullify the love that we have for them. And it may take a skilled somebody to help us to hold both the rage and the love together without the one deleting the other. Is that? On this journey of forgiveness, we may need to find ways to relieve our pain, which may mean that we need to withdraw ourselves from a particular person or situation. Sometimes we need to do that just to regain a healing and strengthening place. Sometimes we may need to confront, because sometimes people have hurt us and they seemingly are unaware what they've done to us. So sometimes the journey of forgiveness is confronting others about the very hurt that then we hope to forgive them for. You ask, what if they're not interested in going on the journey? What if they don't give a damn? What happens if they don't acknowledge that they've done anything wrong? Well, then again, we've got the choice to stop this journey. But if we stop going on this journey, know that we are stopping the journey of entering the heart of God's heart. This journey is not just a journey between me and the one who has hurt me. It's a journey into the heart of God's heart. And we can continue without them, and our example is Jesus. It's not ideal. It won't possibly lead to the fruit of reconciliation. But we can forgive unilaterally, as Jesus has forgiven us unilaterally. And for me, the movement there is the movement from surrendering my right to revenge, to do ill, to journey from that to a place of wanting to do good. And so if you ask me, how do I know that I have forgiven somebody? One, I would want to say, it may well be a lifelong journey that doesn't have a neat end. It may well be a lifelong journey. But I think it's a journey of the spectrum from withholding to do harm to doing good. That when I discover within myself a renewed appreciation for that person, a sense of joy when I think of them. And that doesn't mean I stop feeling the pain. It means that I hold both together. And if there are any parents here, you know that. You know that. You have that ability, that your love for your child is constant, but there are sometimes that your children have hurt you. And when you think of those moments, that hurt still stabs, but you are able to hold a joy, a gratitude, a love for your child, even though that pain may still exist. And so to forgive another is not necessarily to be free of the pain caused by the other. It may just mean that we have to hold both. This journey, I have a sense, will be propelled by prayer or not at all. Jesus was very clear. Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute us. And so before we have a time of engagement, let's just take a moment of silence, and I invite you to bring the face of that person, and maybe it's ourselves, and ask God to give us an appreciation for that one, and perhaps even a joy. Oh, Jesus, you freely forgive us for free. Sorry that we want to pay for that gift. And sorry that we want to make others pay too. Oh, come now, Jesus, and help each one of us here to be set free. Help us to forgive ourselves, please. Please forgive us into forgiving us. Forgiving ourselves and forgiving others. Amen. Well, if there be any light that has been shared, then it is just a sliver that has crossed my path that I share, and now is an opportunity for us to share the many slivers of light that all of us have and enlarge the subject. So let's have a time of dialogue. Thank you. Lovely. Thank you. Well, I think your last word there is helpful, the word justice. Someone said justice is love distributed. Justice is the way we love, the way we forgive people who we can't actually be in one-on-one conversation with. So on a broader scale, it is the seeking of justice, seeking of fairness, seeking of trying to heal some of the wrongs that have been done. In my own country, you've heard of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which was a process of seeking forgiveness. It was not always tasting the fruit of reconciliation. There were many who have scathing understandings of that, that here the victims now having to offer forgiveness, you know. But it certainly has given new life to our land, and the alternatives were disastrous. But where we have fallen down as a nation is quite what you are saying, is the, well, what about the repairing justice? Land that was taken, houses, et cetera, people's livelihoods, an economy that is continues to favor some over others. So it's, that would all be part of that work. Not easy. Do others want to respond to that? Yeah. Other comments or differences, people who have different understandings of what's been shared? Or? Yeah?
A couple of years ago, I visited a Civil War battlefield at Chickamauga, and it was a scene where 32,000 men were killed in a day and a half in the Civil War. And 20 years later, the And I thought when I left, why didn't you hit the barbecue first? I guess what I'm asking is, I think a lot of Christian Americans wonder, why can't, are there efforts to talk to the Taliban, to talk to Al-Qaeda? Are there, is that possible at an international level? To have discussions, forgiveness.
Must I repeat that? Did everyone hear? Okay. Spoken about a battle, and then after the battle, years later, the vets got together on both sides and had a barbecue, and asking, why can't we have the barbecue before, kind of thing? And then asking, just on a national level today, is there space for the communication, for the contact with Taliban, et cetera, to have that communication beforehand. Yeah.
Well, the challenge I have with what Bob's saying is that T.S. Eliot says, to forget is to conceal. And those veterans had a barbecue, but they concealed the fact that 20 years later, nobody was talking about the slaves, the freed slaves. The reason for that battle was slavery. And it's the veterans got together, and that happened again at Gettysburg, when they had their centennial, 50-year anniversary or something. And all the veterans hugged at Pickett's charge, and that was a wonderful scene. But it took another 50 years before the nation faced up to what had happened to African Americans. And I think they couldn't have a barbecue before because the issues were impossible. I don't know how we got through that.
Okay. Thanks, Paul. Yeah.
That also implies, is forgiveness only among, between two, or is it among multiple parties? Were African Americans invited to that barbecue? So this can't just be one side or the other with a clear line, but it may be a triangle or a spiral.
So it's dependent on truth and the revealing of truth and the fullness of it.
Fullness of truth.
Silence is often interpreted to be assent. So if we are silent, we're complicit.
Thank you. Yeah.
Your experience in South Africa, what would you say to that question about speaking to our enemies ahead of time? What are the complexities of that? Because I think you've experienced.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the... I think we learn a couple of things. One, before we even knew it as common population, in 1985 there was communication between the ANC, which was considered a terrorist organization, and the government. And it was during those years of 1985, in the 80s, where the worst political oppression was actually taking place. So in the heat of the fire, people were meeting and talking without us knowing at all. And which was incredible. And it took very large people to do that. And I guess people like Nelson Mandela realized that any other option is just going to be a bloodbath larger than we've ever seen. So that conversation began. But it is interesting, I mean, just picking up on what Paul has said there regarding truth, that those discussions were not, they were not simple, and Nelson Mandela was very, very strong in the negotiations. And at one point, they'd set up what was called CODESA, which was the first round of public talks. And when the violence continued, the theory was quite simple. Either the government, de Klerk, right, F.W. de Klerk, is involved in this, which is in bad faith then, obviously, or he's not, and then he's not in control. So both are not helpful scenarios. And Mandela walked out of the talks then. So the negotiations were very difficult, and it was Mandela saying, you will acknowledge the truth of what is going on here. They didn't pretend. They didn't cover certain things. But, you know, we've had highs and lows. I mean, you have this incredible movement of reconciliation and a negotiated government and settlement, unprecedented, and the world celebrated with us. But then over time, when the wrongs, as has been mentioned, are not being addressed soon enough, quick enough, and the people who have always benefited, myself, the privileged, seem to be benefiting even more under the new dispensation, because now I can trade with the world, remember? Before I couldn't, now I can trade. So I'm actually benefiting even more. It's very hard. And so the journey of forgiveness and reconciliation and justice is an ongoing, it's an ongoing journey. But at some point, I don't know about barbecuing with the Taliban, but there will be conversations at some point. It's just ludicrous. Yeah. But I really want us to come back here, like last night. James and John are involved with violence. You and I. Let's start here. If we can't talk to the person sitting next to us, then we can't expect, you know, too much else to be happening. Yes, Sam?
It's been my experience with violence for about the past 8 years. It's a value for us to be violent, and that usually looks to me, anyway, in my limited geographical area, that if it's long as it's a value to us, we will continue to be violent. I don't know what to do about that. Mm. I mean, I've been in touch with people. We figure maybe 500 people a month. And I don't see any love towards nonviolence. Mm. It's always an answer to the problem if we have violence. That's the ultimate answer.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you. Yes. Thanks. I was paraphrasing. That was my version. Yes. Yeah, no, thank you. I remember once we were picketing a military display. You know, they have these big shows. I guess they have them here, and they show off the latest armaments and everything like that. And on our picket, the person who was leading the demonstration told us to write on the inside of the placard so that we could see it, "I protest not against you, but for you." And that's quite a shift, that I protest not against you, but actually for you. I'm protesting for your liberation as much as my own, from our addiction to the things of violence in the world. Yeah. Okay, friends, tomorrow, if you would like to, if you want to prepare, today we didn't read too much, But tomorrow, Acts chapter 10 and 11, maybe 9, 10 and 11, if you'd like to give that a go to read. And then, just to prepare you, Thursday, I'm going to try and go through the whole book of Esther, all right, which is just the most awesome, awesome book. And it's very short, and so I don't have the time here to read it and refer to it. So it's going to depend on you having read the text. So try and give the book of Esther a read beforehand. Great. Thank you. Just remember Grandma God, huh?